see today. The gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So on last week's episode of the Paracast, we were talking about one of those UFO disclosure petitions, that coming, of course, from none other than Steve Bassett of the Paradigm Research Group, who's been a guest on the Paracast, prior to Chris O'Brien's tenure, which we expect will be permanent, as the co-host of the show. But that didn't fare too well. He got, what, 10, 12,000 signees. Well, and the White House had the third assistant flunky bureaucrat respond saying, now there are no spaceships, and goodbye. Nice effort. So he's trying again. What's the story, Chris?
Well, I think he's getting a little bit more creative this time, Gene. He's kind of drilling in and zeroing in on any information, I guess, that would be tied into what was called the Rockefeller Initiative, which is back in the mid-90s. Lawrence Rockefeller made some behind-the-scenes inquiries, met with Hillary Clinton and I think Bill Clinton as well, and tried to jumpstart a disclosure process, which never really went anywhere. He did fund a rather controversial effort, which started out as a briefing, basically, a briefing document written by Don Berliner and Antonio Huneas, which was co-opted and kind of taken over by Stephen Greer, who then used it for his own purposes. This whole thing was funded by Lawrence Rockefeller, and we do know that Rockefeller did make some very extensive behind-the-scenes inquiries into disclosure and the extent of government knowledge of the UFO phenomenon. So I think it's a good idea for Bassett to kind of zero in on a particular aspect of the disclosure efforts that have happened in the past, and this would be a very good first step. I support this. I wish him all the luck because he's going to need it.
So clarify here. He wants them to tell us what they know about Lawrence Rockefeller's efforts?
Yes. In other words, there's a petition out there to fully disclose what happened as a result of the Rockefeller Initiative. Yeah.
So the question, of course, is they can either admit that it exists, but then they're not constrained to give us an honest appraisal of the results. Or just say, well,
of course not.
People are inclined to reach theories, and this person attempted to explore something that we find no evidence for. Goodbye. Good luck.
I think Bassett's approach by targeting his effort to a specific set of circumstances and a topic like the Rockefeller Initiative, I think this is it makes sense strategically and tactically in this effort. And I think he's just going to become more and more of a thorn in their side, and he's going to zero in on, you know, I think the elements of the potential disclosure process that have the potential of bearing, you know, the most fruit quickly. And I think this is very smart on his part to do this, and I do support it, and I wish him all the luck that he possibly could use, because he's going to need it.
Well, the question is here, did he poison the pool with his first effort, with the 12,000 signatures? Because now he needs 25,000 in order to even be acknowledged, I guess, by the White House, right?
Right. Yeah, there is a ratcheting up process here. I think he should have probably done this one first and then waited, you know, to do the big blanket sort of general petition. I think should have been done later. I think he would have had a much better chance of getting the required signatures for a broader appeal to the White House. But again, I mean, all this, as you probably suspect, and you know I feel, this is all just, I think it's just a lot of posturing. It's a lot of grandstanding. It's forcing the White House to make these very disingenuous statements that say, we don't know anything about any of this stuff. And basically, they could just stonewall us, you know, from now until three administrations down the road, and we're not going to get any closer. I think by drilling down on specific aspects of the historical record of a disclosure effort, I think he has more of a chance of possibly getting them to slip up and release something. But again, I'm not holding my breath.
Well, that's the question, slip up. And you think worrying about the state of the economy, worrying about Obama's chances for reelection in 2012, the least item on their list of concerns will be trying to answer questions about some UFO disclosure effort of some years back. Now, you knew Lawrence Rockefeller, didn't you?
I did. I had the distinct honor and pleasure of spending one-on-one with him an entire weekend with just him and I. And there's not too many people, I think, in the field that can actually say that. Generally, when you meet the man, it's within a group context, what have you. I just happened to luck out and be introduced to him, and I must have sparked some sort of interest in him because he spent the entire afternoon and evening with me and invited me back to spend the following day at a mutual friend's house. Actually, my neighbor, Hannah Strong, was the one that introduced me to him. When I arrived at Hannah's house, after she told me to drop everything I was doing and get my research together and get over there, I had no idea why she was saying this. Quite out of character for her. John Mack was leaving her house, and I thought I blew it. I had taken too much time because Mack was leaving, and I walked inside, and there's Lawrence just sitting there smiling. So I had a great time. I quizzed him up one side, down the other. He was extremely open, very magnanimous, seemed genuinely interested, motivated, excited by the paranormal and ufology and after death studies, NDEs. We spoke for many hours on a whole variety of topics. Of course, the one that was closest and dearest to his heart was the whole crop circle phenomenon. And he did gift me with Michael Glickman's book, Corn Circles, which I cherish today. I think it's just a super classic, important work. It's very basic. It's very simple. It sort of lines up and delineates out the growing pattern of complexity within the crop circle phenomenon. In other words, how they became more and more complex. When the first additions to, you know, the simple circle occurred in 1986, and then following that progression, I just value this book tremendously, and I think there's amazing clues in there. But the bottom line is Lawrence was, it seemed as confused about the extent of government knowledge into the UFO subject as we are. Sure, he was an insider, kind of a billionaire guy who knows a lot of people, obviously, but I really did get a genuine feeling of wonder and questioning exactly to what extent the government does hold all these secrets, as people like Bassett and Greer have contended. And I think it's really important for the record to come out on Lawrence's involvement. Antonio Huneas wrote a very good record in the Open Minds magazine last year about Rockefeller's involvement in ufology, which I do recommend people look up and read. But again, getting back to Bassett, I think this is a really smart move on his part, and I wish him all the luck.
Right. Now, we've had our differences with Stephen Bassett, I think maybe because he tends to overlook the crazies in the UFO field, and maybe some of his viewpoints are expressed a little too vigorously, a little bit too dogmatically. But we'll have to see what happens. I mean, if this brings about any realization that creates the climate for more serious research, it's got to be a plus.
Not if you're talking about the White House in an election year. I'm sorry, this is a third rail toxic subject that will not be addressed.
Yeah, I agree with you there. But it would be nice if some response came. We're going to navigate from disclosure and petitions to UFOs in wartime. We've got a guy named Mac Maloney coming next. Tell us about this book.
I really like this book, Gene. I think it's a great companion to other books that have been written in the past about UFOs and in regards to the military. It's chock full of really interesting sighting reports going all the way back to Alexander's alleged encounters in two occasions, which I didn't know. And we all have heard about the Flying Shields encounter, supposedly. But there was another encounter as well, which he shows in his book. He borrows heavily from other writers. Obviously, Jacques Vallée, who we've had on the show, wrote the wonderful book with Chris Aubeck called Wonders in the Sky. But he also leans on Strange Company, which is a very, very interesting book written by a guy named Keith Chester, which I do also recommend. It has quite a bit of material in there on Foo Fighters. I think that's the best book to read about the Foo Fighter phenomenon. So we're going to have some fun today. This book is really exciting. I learned a lot from it. Some of the cases that I kind of remembered reading about but forgotten about, they're all kind of tied together in a nice, complete package here. And we're going to have some fun talking with Mac.
The book is UFOs in Wartime. The guest, Mac Maloney, coming up next on
The Paracast.
So here's what happened. I was placing an order online. The site went down. It just stopped responding. It took hours before it returned, but I'd already placed the order with another company. If your site goes down, you could lose business. And if you have a business or personal site, you'll want to know it's easy to run and it will stay online. At iWeb, your site is hosted on one of the most reliable networks in the world. Check it out, iWeb.com. That's iWeb.com. Fate Magazine provides true reports of the strange and unknown. Keep up with the latest on angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, life after death, and much, much more. To receive your free issue of Fate Magazine, call now at 1-800-728-2730 or visit their website at www.fatemag.com. That's 1-800-728-2730. What are you waiting for? Your fate awaits.
Nick Wadena with Midas Resources. If you have an IRA or 401k, did you know you can turn that nest egg into a physical gold and silver nest egg? Do you know what kind of specific precious metals are allowed by law to be in retirement accounts? Did you know that you can take physical delivery of these precious metals? Would you like to know more? It's a fact. Stocks and mutual funds have been a wild ride, and many people's retirement funds have taken large hits. If you put $100,000 in gold in January of 2009, it would be worth over $200,000 today. If you put $100,000 in silver, then it would be worth over $300,000 today. As bailouts for banks and the seemingly endless printing of money continued worldwide, the value of the dollar could decline further, in turn possibly pushing gold and silver much, much higher. Protect what you work so hard for. Call me, Nick Wadena, 1-800-686-2237, extension 343, and learn what your options are. Again, that's 1-800-686-2237, extension 343. Once again, 1-800-686-2237, extension 343.
From the shattered Rust Belt come the Lost Vegas.
Now, also available in digital format at Amazon and iTunes worldwide.
Don't come calling when your walls start falling down.
Life Before the Collapse by the Lost Vegas on 180-gram vinyl and mastered especially for vinyl by legendary audio engineer Steve Hall. Life Before the Collapse by the Lost Vegas.
The Lost Vegas.
Now available at Amazon.com.
And iTunes.
Did you know that gold and silver contain healing properties? It's true. Since the beginning of mankind's history, gold and silver have not only been used as real money, but also for healing our minds and bodies. Utopiasilver.com is your leading source for colloidal silver and colloidal gold, offering supplement protocols that can heal and enhance your health. Protocols for boosting the immune system, insomnia, yeast infections, herpes, and countering the effects of vaccinations and radiation poisoning. And now Utopiasilver.com encourages the use of real money with this buy one, get one free real money special. For details on your colloidal silver and colloidal gold supplements, call 888-213-4338 and ask about 50% off for first-time customers. That's 888-213-4338 or visit utopiasilver.com. Utopiasilver.com, fighting for liberty and healing one American at a time.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And if you'd like to catch up on past episodes, we have hundreds of shows for you to download direct from theparacast.com. That's theparacast.com. Or check us out at iTunes.
The subject on the table on the Paracast with Gene and Chris is UFOs in wartime. Our guest is Mac Maloney, whom we welcome to the show. Mac, how did you get introduced to doing a book about UFOs?
Well, it all started about 3 years ago. I was at lunch with my editor at Penguin Books, and I've been writing for about 20 years full-time, but up till now all of the books that I've done have been fiction, military fiction, and a couple of science fiction books.
You mean something like a Tom Clancy kind of approach?
It was, right, exactly, in the Tom Clancy genre. Tom Clancy is like my godfather, if you know what I mean, my literary godfather. So
I understand. I do know Tom Clancy slightly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be here right now. He really opened the door for a lot of people to write the kind of military fiction that I've been writing for years, so he's my hero.
You were writing military fiction and science fiction, and now you approach a factual book. So the
right.
question is, how did you transition?
We were really just kicking around ideas, and I had told my editor that, you know, I'm always doing research on military weapons and military history and so on, but I've always had this interest in UFOs, and I've read some articles about the Foo Fighters, and it just occurred to me that it seemed like a lot of UFO sightings took place during wartime, and it was just an idea that just came to me, and he and I spoke about it, and he says, you know, really kind of look into that, see if there's something, if there's enough to do a book on it, and I did look into it, and it turned out that there was. So, as I said, that was about 3 years ago. Probably took about 2 years from beginning to end to research and then to write the book, and it's coming out on December 6th.
Now, that's a good point to mention here. This isn't something that you just threw together. You really did your research. You said you were interested in UFOs before then. Had you read the literature on the subject? Was it casual interest, something that started when you were a child? What?
Yeah, it started when I was a child. I was always a big fan of science fiction, and, you know, in my mind, science fiction and UFOs were close cousins, let's say. I've never seen a UFO, but my older brother, who was a lifer in the Air Force, saw one while he was assigned to an air base down in Charleston, South Carolina. My wife saw one before we were married. I know people who have seen them. I've never seen one, but I've always had an interest in them, which I think a lot of people do. So I was just in a good position to be able to sit down and write a book about them.
Okay, so the conventional wisdom has it from some people that we didn't see UFOs until 1947, when Kenneth Arnold saw 9 disc-shaped or crescent-shaped objects over Mount Rainier in the state of Washington. But, of course, there were sightings in World War II. But that wasn't where they began. So what was your starting point?
They go way back, you know, to the Bible and really throughout history. I mean, you know, as you say, Arnold, he just coined the term in 1947, flying saucers.
Well, it was kind of coined by the press, but
right,
exactly.
I'll
go for that, sure.
Right, you're right. He said they looked like saucers skipping across a lake or something, and that turned into flying saucers. And that became like the catchphrase, and all of a sudden you had this media storm having to do with flying saucers. But as you say, they were seen, they just didn't have that name in World War II, in World War I, in between the wars, all the way back to there's a story in the book about Constantine the First, who was about to have a major battle for control of the Roman Empire, and he saw what people think was a UFO the night before the battle, and for some reason he interpreted that as being that if you tell your warriors to put crosses on their shields, you will win this battle. And that's what he did. He won the battle, and that's the reason Christianity became the official religion of the Roman Empire. So in a way, you could say that because of a UFO, the Christian religion, you know, flourished.
Let me interrupt quickly and mention to our audience that the particular sighting event, Mac, that you're referring to, which is a very intriguing, not a well-known sighting event in history, was of like a glowing or flaming cross in the sky. And it was that image of the cross that was then suggested to be put on the shields, which then, you know, dovetails into your story. But I think it's interesting that we should have an unusually shaped aerial object that then becomes the iconic symbol that we are all more than too familiar with.
Yeah, very interesting story from back then. That happened in 312 A.D.
Right. Now, of course, you mentioned the Bible. You didn't look at Ezekiel's wheels as anything that you might want to include in this, or because it wasn't during, quote-unquote, wartime?
Well, it wasn't during wartime, and you know, I think that people have seen that story enough. I really kind of tried to go for stories that, you know, might not have been put out there as much, you know, before. Some of the stories we came across were stories that no one's really heard before. So, right, we just kind of didn't go with the Ezekiel's wheel story.
I would like to have you go through the two events that Alexander, the famous Greek conqueror, and his army's experience. There is one story that's fairly well known in ufology, but there's a second story that you include in your book that I find very fascinating. Why don't you give our listeners a a good sense of those two events.
Well, Alexander at the time was, you know, on the verge of conquering the known world. He was this is the 3rd century BC. He was about to cross a river and ford a river with his army. His army included lots of men and horses and also war elephants. And he was about to go across this river when these two strange aircraft appeared in the sky and started spitting out flames from their rims and doing all this kind of stuff. And it panicked the horses and the war elephants to the point where they did not cross the river. So lots of people apparently witnessed this, and it I'm sure gave him pause. Then later on, there's a famous story about the siege of Tyre, which is in now present-day Lebanon. The people there who were resisting him built a city out in the harbor. He surrounded it, and he was trying to conquer the city of Tyre, which people had built out in this harbor. And he was constructing causeways to allow his troops to attack the city. As they were about to do that, when they finally did this massive construction project, these flying objects showed up again, and a couple of them fired on the walls of the city, knocking down the walls, and allowed Alexander to take over the city. A very strategic victory for him. Interesting story.
Wow, that's a detail that I wasn't aware of, that these objects actually aided in the bombardment of the city. That's a pretty interesting wrinkle.
Right.
So basically, the UFOs were, in that particular sense, participating in the wartime efforts back then.
Right, right. Once again, the first story, they seemed to have been wanting to hold him back. The second story, they came to his aid. So, you know, it's another puzzle of the big UFO puzzle.
And maybe they don't have a prime directive there when it comes to interfering with human history. That could raise all sorts of cans of worms, and we're going to want to ask you.
Oh, boy.
Where that takes us. Oh, yeah. Well, the book is called UFOs in Wartime. The author is Mac Maloney. A reminder, neighbors, that we have a unique way for you to participate in the show, to ask questions of our guests. When we can schedule them far enough in advance, we will post a forum topic or thread in the question bank. That's located in the Paracast community forums. Go to forum.theparacast.com. Once again, that's forum.theparacast.com. It takes just a moment to join up, and after you join up, then you can participate. And when we can give you time to ask those questions, we'll post the topic in the Paracast community forums. I'm Gene Steinberg. He's Chris O'Brien. You're in
the Paracast.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Hey, folks, in today's fast-paced work environment, getting everyone in the same room for a meeting can be challenging, especially when they work in different locations. And that's why I use GoToMeeting with HD Faces by Citrix. It is amazing. You can collaborate online by sharing your presentation while seeing colleagues face-to-face in high definition. They can hide their blemishes. Video quality is so clear and natural, it's like being in the same room. And all you need is an internet connection with a webcam. It's that easy. So here's what I can do. For example, on the Paracast, which I host with my friend Chris O'Brien, we live in different locations. We need to share something, a document or something like that. All I have to do is call him up with GoToMeeting, and I say, Chris, take a look at this, and he said he's ready to go. You can try GoToMeeting with HD Faces free for 30 days. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, enter the promo code PODCAST, use the promo code PODCAST.
Local Army Navy surplus stores are hard to find these days, but not military issue supplies. They're right here online at mainmilitary.com. That's right, just like the state, M-A-I-N-E, military.com. We have everything for true, total preparedness. MaineMilitary.com is not a typical website. It has much more than your old surplus store. Quality military-issue survival gear like canteens, mess kits, utensils, gas masks, filters, and chemical suits. Magnesium fire-starting tools, strike anywhere, waterproof, and storm matches. First aid kits, splints, tourniquets, parachute 550 cord, military manuals, sandbags by the bale, and a huge Molly assortment of vests and pouches for every need. Call 207-989-6783, 207-989-6783, or visit MaineMilitary.com. That's M-A-I-N-E, military.com, the main name in military supply.
Survival of the fittest. In any and all situations, survival is your number one priority. That requires being tough and thinking smart. And the folks at Freeze Dry Guy are going to help you do just that. They have a long-range patrol ration entrees, what they call the Brick Pack. When you're in survival mode, it is absolutely the best item for your survival pack or bug-out bag. You can go farther, faster, and carry more food with the LRP cold weather ration entrees. Not only do these long-lasting, durable entrees help sustain you or your family through the harshest environment or situation, they are by far the most delicious of their kind. No contest. With a variety of tasty entrees, you can't beat the LRP Brick Packs. Let Freeze Dry Guy help you in your survival situations. Go to freezedryguy.com. That's freezedryguy.com. Or call 866-404-3663. That's 866-404-FOOD.
Discover a natural way to experience cleaner, healthier indoor air without expensive filters and high-priced machines. Discover what healthcare professionals have known for decades. Salt ionizes and purifies indoor air. That's why you need to visit SilverSkyImports.com. SilverSkyImports.com offers a wide assortment of Himalayan crystal salt lamps, handcrafted from salt crystals that are millions of years old, contain healthy ions that eliminate odor, reduce bacteria, and can even help allergy and asthma sufferers, which means you and your family will breathe better, sleep sounder, and have more energy. These salt lamps are available in stunning natural colors and shapes to accent any home or office, are environmentally friendly, and best of all, they're affordable. And don't forget, SilverSkyImports.com also carries gourmet and bath salts. Order today at SilverSkyImports.com or call 800-494-1369. That's 800-494-1369. Breathe easier, feel better, live healthier at SilverSkyImports.com.
Hi, this is Don Ecker, and you are tuned into the Paracast. Let me tell you what, you're going to hear stuff here that you probably won't hear anywhere else. Hear that, George Snorri?
The topic on discussion is UFOs in wartime, going back hundreds or thousands of years with Mac Maloney, with Gene and Chris on the Paracast. So we were exploring Alexander's efforts in wartime and the apparent efforts by whatever was piloting the UFOs to influence our war. As I said, maybe the aliens or whatever they are don't have a prime directive. Do you have any evidence in your book of other cases involving not just something in the sky, but something that seems to be a participant?
Interesting question. And the answer is, not a direct participant, but we have lots of stories in the book about someone observing the human race at war. I mean, the bulk of the stories in the book seem to point out that there is, whenever we go to war, whether it's back in, B.C. or right up into the present, there are a large number of UFO sightings of things just watching us, looking at us, observing us. Watching us kill each other.
Well, Mac, you do have one really interesting story from the Vietnam War that features, an 8-foot helmeted giant.
Right.
That seemed to be somewhat alien in appearance that happened to kill a threatening Viet Cong, or some sort of North Vietnamese soldier, so that a GI could clamber aboard a U.S. helicopter and be rescued. I know I'm jumping ahead in our timeline a little bit here, but there are those rare accounts where you do seem to have some sort of interference one side or another.
Right. That is one of the exceptions. And basically what that story was the Vietnam War was the way they fought the Vietnam War. I'm sure everyone knows now there were no front lines. It was a helicopter war. The Army would send in dozens, even hundreds of helicopters full of troops. They would land in the middle of enemy territory, fight the enemy, and try to kill more of them than they killed of us. Not really a good way to run a war, but, that's another subject. On this one day, it was in 1966, this gentleman was part of one of these airborne assaults. They landed in a field and immediately got into a firefight with the Viet Cong, and there was so much ordnance going back and forth that it lit the dry grass of the field on fire. He got out of his helicopter, and his crew chief, or his sergeant, told him, that the helicopter in back of them was having mechanical problems. In fact, their engine was on fire. So he ordered this gentleman to take a fire extinguisher and go back and help put out the fire in the helicopter. He did this, but he left his rifle behind on his helicopter and ran to help the second helicopter. By the time he got there, the people in the helicopter had already solved the problem, and they started waving him back. Well, at this point, he's in the middle of a battle, and he's in the middle of a large grass fire, and he gets disoriented. And he finds himself face-to-face with a Viet Cong soldier or a North Vietnamese soldier, and he's about to be shot. And what happened next was he saw the a giant. That's the only way to describe this person. He was about 8 feet tall. He was wearing some kind of a uniform, including a helmet that covered most of his face. This being killed the North Vietnamese soldier, saved the American soldier's life. The American soldier finally found his helicopter, ran back to it, took off, and when they took off, he saw the dead enemy soldier, but there was no sign of the giant that had saved his life. Very, very unusual story.
Where did you get the documentation on this? I mean, this is really good stuff. And I'm wondering about the evidence train on this.
Well, you know, what I did was a lot of these were found on the net. And if my editor said, if you can find two sources for a story, let's go with it. The idea here is that, you know, I'm not exactly a UFO researcher. I'm more of a reporter. And I just wanted to lay out, you know, a whole different string of stories to kind of make the point that UFOs do show up. It seems like they show up more frequently when we are at war. And the Vietnam War itself was kind of a crazy war. I mean, let's face it, there was a lot of drug use during it. It was a war that, as I said, had no front lines, no real victory in sight. You did your 365 days in country, and you just prayed that you could get out. And you made it through however you could make it through. So stories from the Vietnam War, I'll be honest with you, are a little offbeat.
Now, did you ever encounter what has now become, among serious UFO researchers, quite a famous story that was first, I think, touted by a researcher named Bill English back in the late 80s about a B-52 crew that were found mutilated but sitting in their seats with their seatbelts on in a crash plane that seemed to have been set down into the jungle. There was no pattern of broken trees like the plane had glided in. It was more like it was literally sat right down into the jungle. And, of course, the fantastic claim by English that I think it was seven crew members were found, like the cattle mutilation cases, mutilated but still sitting in their seats aboard this B-52. Did you ever encounter that particular story?
No, I didn't. I'm hearing it for the first time. I'm sitting here with my jaw agape.
Believe it or not, this was a story that was touted for some time, and I've heard other people refer to it. I think it all goes back to the original Bill English account. But I was just curious because this is one of those, like, too strange possibly to be true type stories that comes from at the time, a fairly reputable source. I think the story's been pretty much discounted since then, but again, this is another Vietnam era story. We're getting a little ahead of ourselves, though. Let's go back to our timeline. I love the way you have your book. It's kind of similar to Jacques Vallée and Chris Aubeck's book, Wonders in the Sky, where they just start, you know, from the historical record and then just work our way forward. And you have a lot of interesting stories, but there seems to be kind of a bit of a hole in your research during the Middle Ages. There are a few accounts that you give in there, and I'd like you to tell our audience about some of the more celebrated accounts. There's a couple of really good ones in there.
The one that really kind of was of interest to me was that, and I didn't know this before, was that when the plague hit Europe, Western Europe in the 1300s, that, you know, a lot of people, you know, and it's become accepted now that it was caused by bacteria carried by fleas, the fleas were carried by rats. But there were a lot of people back then who apparently saw things like flying objects flying around, leaving vapor in its wake, people becoming sick from this vapor. And and that maybe this was an alternate cause or another explanation for the plague. But the odd thing was that along with these stories about this strange vapor. People reported seeing figures dressed in black hoods and robes and using with sickles and unexplainably killing livestock. And they were almost like medieval men in black. And today we know them as the Grim Reapers. So there was a lot of strange things going on back then. And I had never heard that before. That was just something I came upon in my research. And one thing I wanted to say was these stories, you know, we did pick and choose the stories we were going to use from medieval times because the core of the book, we wanted to start at the beginning of the 20th century. And we just wanted to kind of give everyone a taste of some things that had happened before that. But the book really kicks off in 1909 with the scare ships.
I like that term, scare ships. We just had Jeff Danilek on the show, and we talked about the great airships, which were 10 years prior to that. But why don't you give us some examples of the scare ship sightings?
Well, the scare ships is that the chapter on the scare ships, it's one of my favorites because I had known a little bit about it, but when I kind of started researching it, it just seemed to get stranger and stranger. What happened was in 1909, in spring of that year, a policeman in Peterborough, England, heard a strange sound. It was about 4 in the morning. He was walking a beat, I guess you could say, and he looked up and he saw this object go over him. It was huge.
Neighbors, we want you to check out our newly updated forums. Go to forum.theparacast.com. That's forum.theparacast.com. A new, snazzier look, better integration with your favorite social networks. Check it out. We have to break this up and speak to you about it on the other side of the show here. With Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Are you ready to order the official Paracast t-shirt? You asked, we answered. We're now taking orders for the official Paracast t-shirt. It comes in white, 100% cotton. The front of it features the same logo that we have on our community forums. On the back it says, Separating Signal from Noise. To order the official Paracast t-shirt, here's all you have to do. Visit our new online store at store.theparacast.com. One more time, that's store.theparacast.com. You can use a major credit card to place your order for the official Paracast t-shirt. Hey, neighbors, we have one more thing to talk about, and that's more merchandise at the official Paracast store. We have hats, we have jackets, we even have a flip video camcorder customized with the Paracast logo at the official Paracast store. It's all now available at the official Paracast store, store.theparacast.com.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Ready for cold and flu season? Now's the time to get ready and save during the pre-winter sale at HerbalHealer.com. Stock up on powerful, natural flu fighters like olive leaf extract, elderberry power, and grapefruit seed liquid. Don't forget your vitamin D3 this winter. Right now, HerbalHealer.com has 120 soft gels, 1,000 IUs, on sale for only $9. And remember, HerbalHealer.com offers eFoods Global products, delicious, premium, storable foods that contain no MSG. no trans fats, no GMO, and have a 25-year shelf life. Click the eFoods link on HerbalHealer.com and try eFoods storable meals for free. Bookmark HerbalHealer.com, then experience live chat, correspondence courses, and sign up for our free newsletter. As always, new customers get a free 128-page catalog with your order. Log on and hit the pre-winter specials at HerbalHealer.com. Healing the world with nature, one person at a time, since 1988.
Solar power.
Solar power.
Hand crank power.
Hand crank power.
Radio power.
Radio power.
The goods you want, the good deals you need to power up your survival are at 21stCenturyGoods.com. In our solar department, you'll find solar generator kits, solar lanterns, flashlights, radios, and solar cell phone and laptop chargers. 21stCenturyGoods.com is your hand crank headquarters for everything from generators to flashlights to emergency, weather, and shortwave radios by Grundig and Kato. Big brand names and big deals. Like this. Get a free solar flashlight with every order over $75. But hurry, offer ends soon. Go to 21stCenturyGoods.com, spelled the number 2, the number 1, ST, CenturyGoods.com. That's 21stCenturyGoods.com or call 866-999-8422. 21stCenturyGoods.com. Power up your survival.
This is Paul Bannister. I'm the author of Tabloid Man, The Baffling Chair of Death. You're in the Paracast. And now I'm on the show because the Queen herself asked me to do it. She knows, well, she told me, the Paracast is the gold standard of paranormal broadcasting. Listen and be spooked.
It's the night.
Gene and Chris in the Paracast, we have Mac Maloney. The book is called UFOs in Wartime, and we're taking it through the years, incredible cases. So the UFO, Mac, passed overhead. What happened next?
So he saw this object pass over his head. It was about 300 feet long. It was moving very swiftly. It was about 1,000 feet above him, and it was in the shape of a Zeppelin. Germans, and at the time, only the Germans, of course, invented the Zeppelins, and they had civilian Zeppelins, but they didn't have military Zeppelins at the time. This policeman saw this object. He reported it. It made the newspaper. Nothing happened right away, but about a month and a half later, all of a sudden, people all over England start seeing these objects, and they look like Zeppelins, but they're not Zeppelins for several reasons. First of all, they were clocked at going over 200 miles an hour. Even today, the best blimps we have can't make it over 60 miles an hour. They were seen flying against the wind. They were seen simultaneously all over England, indicating that there were more than just one. They were seen with large searchlights glowing from beneath them and shining on the ground. Suddenly, hundreds of people are seeing these things, and people go, what could these things possibly be? There was a newspaper that clocked one. They had a reporter in one town who saw it, and he started a clock, and then one of his associates in another town saw it show up 20 minutes later, and that's how they figured out they were going more than 200 miles an hour. Yet it was impossible at that time for a German Zeppelin to make the 700-mile round trip it would take to go from Germany to England and back at night. So they weren't Zeppelins. They weren't Zeppelins. No one ever figured out what they were.
You know, it's interesting when you say this, Mac, how in our previous week's episode, I brought up the fact that UFO sightings over the years, and certainly maybe not so much in Renaissance times or before that, but more recent times, they seem to have a technology that's only a few steps ahead of ours.
Right. Exactly.
Which is very curious.
This is what we found out, in the research. It seems like, and who knows what the explanation could be, but it seems like in the case of the scare ships, and then in the case of the ghost flyers of Sweden, 1933-34, and then again the ghost rockets in Sweden in 1946, it seems in those cases we are seeing a technology that is just slightly ahead of its time. Not slightly, but ahead of its time for some reason. And what the explanation for that is, I don't know, but there's definitely, in those three instances, a good case to be made for it, whatever that case might be.
Precursor element, I think, is really important. Of course, Jacques Vallée and others have really made a note of it and attempted to really analyze the implications of this. But going back to your previous accounts of Alexander, Constantine, other events that occurred much further back in time, not only do we have interference or taking of sides by these objects and the supposed pilots, but we have technology that is way ahead of the time, which doesn't conform to this particular more modern aspect where UFOs tend to be couched just slightly ahead of their time. I think that's an interesting subject for someone out there to tackle and really analyze, but continue.
Well, you know, with the another side story to these scare ships was, as this scare ship mania was going on in 1909, and World War One was just 5 years away, and it had been proven just about, you know, that it was impossible for these things to be Zeppelins, yet they look like Zeppelins. There was an instance where a gentleman saw one of the scare ships over his house at the height of the craze, let's say, and at night, and he happened to live in a part of England that he was on a cliff. And the next day he went out and he found this strange object, which was, he described it as a long metal bar with a soccer ball shaped thing stuck onto it. He had no idea what it was. He got a hold of the local Coast Guard. They came up and they looked at the object, and the local police looked at it, had no idea what it was. They told them to please hang on to it until someone from the British military could look at it. So this is what he did, and he hid it in his barn, as it turned out. Several days later, the British military came and they took it. And they said it was some kind of a targeting device used by ships at sea. What it was doing on top of this cliff, no one ever figured out. But right around the same time, one of this gentleman's servants, house servants, was leaving the house, and she saw these two men, strange men, on the cliff, and they were kind of looking in the same area where he had found this object. And then they were looking in his barn, and she described them as men wearing black. And it just and then as soon as she confronted them, they left, she left. And they kind of scared her away. From that point on, there were other people who would say that they would run into these mysterious characters dressed in black who would show up at the sites of where scare ships had been seen shortly before. So in an odd way, it was almost like the first Men in Black incident happening during the scare ship craze of 1909.
Very interesting. We also had a flurry of sightings in New Zealand that same year of similar described objects. Where did this term scare ships come up with? I love that. I think that's very interesting. I hadn't heard that before.
Well, I think it was created by the media back then. You know, the British media is there's always been and it's the same today. There's always been lots and lots of newspapers in England, and they were even tabloids back then. And I think it was just a word created by someone in the British media, and it stuck.
You know, I wanted to ask you here in terms of sourcing. You said the publisher insisted you have two sources for every story. Now, obviously, in something like this, you're going online, you're checking newspaper morgues, stuff like that. Did you have a chance to talk to anybody about recent cases?
No, I didn't. I had conversations with Richard Haynes and Jerry Clark and Keith Chester, who wrote the book on Foo Fighters called Strange Company. That was just more for background and guidance, though. I went to their books a lot for research. And the book actually ends at the end of the first Gulf War. It just seemed to be the place to end it. And, you know, whether we'll continue on someday from that, I don't know. But I did talk to those guys a lot, but it was more for, like, background research and really guidance on how to do a book like this, because they were experts at it, and I was, you know, admittedly kind of new to the field.
Did you find cases that you thought had promise, but on further discovery they were found to be wanting, maybe bogus?
You know, I probably did. I can't remember, you know, any specific cases right now. It really was a case of going through as much literature as I could put my hands on and still staying with the kind of chronological way that the book is laid out. So I'm going to say no. Almost everything that we really concentrated on wound up in the book, to tell you the truth.
So when you decided to focus on a case, you did this with the help of these experienced researchers, and certainly Jerry Clark is a longtime friend of mine and a friend of the show. They were pointing you in the direction of the cases that had the most significance and the ones worth following up on.
Yes, right, exactly. And especially the ones that were in, you know, the books that they had written. And I also talked to those guys because, like I say, as I said before, I'm kind of new to the game. And I didn't want to say anything that was wrong, if you know what I mean, wrong in quotes. just wanted to create a book that, you know, would be entertaining and at the same time would point out that, you know, this is really strange that UFOs show up a lot while we're at war with each other. And here are the, I think there's 70 different episodes in it. And you know, just read them from beginning to end and then draw your own conclusions. My conclusion is that there's something very unusual going on here. What it is, I would love to know. I don't know, but here's the evidence that something very strange is going on here.
So you're not making an effort here to say, okay, this proves that E.T. is here. It is.
No.
This is stuff that is really weird, and we ought to find out what's going on.
Exactly. That's, you know, you put it exactly. That's exactly how we set out to do the book. I don't know what they are. I would love to know what they are. I think we'd all love to know exactly what they are. You know, are they extraterrestrial? We don't know. You know, are they time travelers? Are they from another dimension? Are they from inner space? Are they from someplace that we can't conceive of? I don't know. But if you read all the stories in the book, I think you have to come to the conclusion that something is there, something is happening, and maybe someday soon. I asked Jerry Clark this. I asked everyone this at the end of the book. I put the question to them, when do you think the UFO puzzle is going to be solved? And Jerry gave what I thought was the best answer and also the most optimistic answer. He said within the next 50 years, the scientific community will finally take UFOs. Maybe you've heard this before. UFOs seriously. And they'll start, you know, researching this and try to look for the answer. And he was, I hope he's off on his timeline. I would like it to happen, you know, sooner than that.
Well, I guess if you are under 30 or 40, that makes sense. You'll live to see it. If
right.
not, you hope that we expand the life cycle of human beings to accommodate that. Now they have a record number of people over 90. There might be hope. We have Mac Maloney. That's because Chris is 400 years old, didn't want to tell you.
Oh,
you know,
boy.
He has those nighttime sojourns with the red substance. Mac Maloney is author of UFOs in Wartime. With Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you own an Apple iPhone and love to listen to your favorite programs on GCN, I've got good news for you. I'm proud to announce that GCN has a brand new iPhone app available for our dedicated listeners at GCNlive.com. Listen to your favorite hard-hitting GCN programs live or on demand right on your iPhone. And the best part? The GCN iPhone app can be yours absolutely free. Download the iPhone app today by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com.
We the people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strip and fibers to protect from counterfeit, then carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Ted Anderson, I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.